So this is from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is from the 6th canto, chapter 9, text 49. Naveda Kripanaha Shreya Atmano Gunavashtudrik Tasya Tan Ikchato Yakchet Yado So Api Tathavida Naveda Kripana Shreya Atmana Gunavashtudrik Tasya Tan Ikchato Yakchet Yadiso Pitta Vida Na Not Veda Knows Kripanaha A miserly living entity Shreyaha The ultimate necessity Atmanaha Of the soul Gunavashtudrik Who is attracted by the creation of the modes of material nature? Tasya of him. Tan, things created by the material energy. Ikchataha, desiring. Yakchet, one bestows. Yadi, If sa api he also tathavida of the kind a foolish kripana who does not know his real self interest. Translation. Those who think material assets to be everything or to be the ultimate goal of life are called misers or kripanas. They do not know the ultimate necessity of the soul. Moreover, if one avoids that which is desired by such fools, he must also be considered foolish. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are two classes of men, namely the kripana and the brahmana. A brahmana is one who knows Brahman, the absolute truth, and who thus knows his real interest. A kripana, however, is one who has a material, bodily concept of life. Not knowing how to utilize his human or demigod life, a kripana is attracted by things created by the material modes of nature. The kripanas who always desire material benefits are foolish, whereas brahmanas who always desire spiritual benefits are intelligent. If a kripana, not knowing his self-interest, foolishly asks for something material, one who awards it to him is also foolish. Krishna, however, is not a foolish person. He is supremely intelligent. If someone comes to Krishna asking for material benefits, Krishna does not award him the material things he desires. Instead, the Lord gives him intelligence so that he will forget his material desires and become attached to the Lord's lotus feet. In such cases, although the kripana offers prayers to the Lord Krishna for material things, the Lord takes away whatever material possessions the kripana has and gives him the sense to become a devotee. As stated by Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Atme vigyaye murke vishaya kenedibo svacharanamrita diya vishaya bulaiba. Since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. If one sincerely prays to God for material possession in exchange for devotional service, the Lord, who is not foolish, such like such an unintelligent devotee, shows him special favor by taking away whatever material possessions he has and gradually giving him the intelligence to be satisfied only by rendering service to his lotus feet. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments in this regard that if a foolish child requests his mother to give him poison, the mother, being intelligent, will certainly not give him poison, even though he requests it. Materialist does not know that to accept material possessions means to accept poison, or the repetition of birth and death. An intelligent person, a brahmana, aspires for liberation from material bondage. That is the real self-interest of a human being. Those who think material assets to be everything or to be the ultimate goal of life are called misers or kriponas. They do not know the ultimate necessity of the soul. Moreover, if one awards that which is desired by such fools, he must also be considered foolish. So certainly this shloka is demolishing any kind of altruism. There are souls in the material world who feel inspired to help others. However, Prabhupada pointed out, even they are selfish, because they do it because they want it. They do it because it makes them feel unique, special and distinct from others. Certainly this world is mainly dominated by kriponas, by those who just want to take. They don't want to give. This we can see all the time. Some people are just born like that. They just walk through life by simply exploiting others. They don't even know they are doing this. For them this is a lifestyle. You know. She tells them, but you actually harmed this person. You actually have stolen something. They go, no, this is a life which is, when there is an opportunity, use it. You know. It was there, so I took it. Nah? How foolish I would be if I wouldn't take it. And you make him aware, you try to make him aware of the consequence of his action, he will not understand. It's the worst kind of people. They don't even know they lie. They don't even know they steal. They just think, this is life. That's how you live in this world. You know, take it. Yeah. So, there are many. You know. And so to be a charitable, mercy. Mercy is something which is very unique, because it's described very scientifically in Bhagavatam. When you are on the mental platform, when you follow your senses and your mind, there is no mercy. It cannot be. There is only at best a deal. You know, I give you this, but you have to give me that. I expect you to give me this because I gave you that. Nothing is unconditional. I remember once coming to Sweden, they arranged a car for me, new car. But it was not available yet, so until it's ordered, it was ordered, but until it comes, the Toyota company gave a car for free for my usage, for that period. And I was going, wow. I get a car for free. I can drive a car for free for some certain period. And I told this to our GBC. He just laughed. He said, there is nothing for free in this world. Because the cost of that car, which was given to me free, is already calculated in the price of another car. They always go, this is cheap. There is a reduction. Sale. Price. Sale. Sale. I know a country like Czech Republic, they have sale all the time. Reduction price. People go, oh, sale, reduction. And they immediately go and buy it. But they don't know what the reduction was from. The original price was already put in such a way that by the time it is reduced, you make still a very good profit. There was even some students, art students, in which make a joke. Somebody gave them some money. So they constructed in the fashion you have these posters here, you know, this kind of gummy posters, you know. They constructed a shopping center. they just rented a piece of land at the edge of Prague, and they make just out of tubes, they just make a structure, and they put this from a distance, it looked like shopping center. You know, but it was like a, just, you know, just the front side. And they put a big advertisement. We are opening new shopping center. It's everything is reduced price. Please come. There were thousands of cars rushing towards that hill. It was a kind of hill. Parking everywhere. People were running up the hill before they realized from a, you know, 100 meter distance, it's just a gumi poster. And the students were just, they had a good time. So this is what illusion does. We are all rushing towards a plastic poster, thinking this to be for real. Because it's cheap, it's for sale, it seems to be easily available. Like people come together for enjoyment. It seems to be quite easy. You know, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending doesn't have to be so expensive. You know, it seems sometimes it comes very easy. But the consequences, they are not so easy. The material nature is designed that for this little amount of time, you will have to suffer that much. Maya makes a deal with you. I will make you feel for 3 minutes really happy. You'll be ecstatic. You will be lost in happiness. Oh yeah, really? And then for 30 years, I will slap you in the face. Is it a good deal? Yeah, they go, yeah. They all buy it. Yeah, and here it's specially case mentioned, a case of a Prabhupada calls it here, a less unintelligent devotee. There is such a thing. It's not like that you go, Hare Krishna, and then everything is there. That's just the beginning. The initiation is beginning. And a process. This is all a process. Sometimes an immature devotee may think, oh, I'm already there. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Yeah. I surrendered. I shaved my hair. There are so many bald-headed fools in this world. No, I'm dressing like a devotee. There are so many Hindus who go, Hare Krishna. They have a dhoti too. They will cheat you right and left. So it's like, it's external. Tilak is just a cheap clay which you can just put on. This is all external. What the final test will be, and that's what this shloka is addressing, is the motivation. What do you really want? From thinking, feeling and willing, this is three, you know, elements which define our consciousness. The desire, that's the most subtle one. We know Prabhupada often quoted the story of Bimanga Thakur, you know, who was coming from a Brahminical background. But being spoiled, so much money going around, you know, he grew so cruel. He became such a kripana that even when his father was dying, and finally his body was supposed to be cremated, he urged the priest who was conducting the ceremony, please can you put a little bit more wood on it and burn the body faster, because I have a date, I have an appointment with a prostitute. It was a special prostitute, Chintamani, kind of deluxe call girl, and he had an appointment. And what did Krishna do? This is described here. He made it for him very difficult. First a storm came. He came to the Ganga which he wanted to cross very quickly. But it couldn't. There was no boat. The river was swelling. So he jumped into the waves and he tried to cross. And he was starting almost to drown. And then actually some dead body came floating by, which can happen in the Ganga. So he used the dead body as a means to cross the river. When he came out, he was completely wet and there was storm, so he was running towards Chintamani's house and it was already very late. So she just went to sleep and closed the gate. It was quite a luxurious house. So he came to the gate, it was closed, so he couldn't get in, you know. So he started to climb up the wall with the help of some rope, but actually it wasn't a rope, it was a snake, you know. Finally, with torn dress, wet and dirty, he made it across the wall, jumped in a garden, ran towards the door, rang the bang on the door, you know, and then Chintamani couldn't believe this, it was late, so she put the light on, went down, opened the door, and there was Bilmanga Thakur. You know, she said, she just looked at him and said, if you would be so attached to Krishna like you are attached to me, you must be a pure devotee. And she said it with such a clarity and purity that immediately it just hit him. And he was going, oh my God, she's right. How do I look like? What have I done? So immediately he turned around. Next morning, sannyas, and he walked towards Vrindavan. You know, he said, it's enough. He knew sannyas. He was coming from a Brahminical background. But because of habituation, you know, anartha, he saw a beautiful young woman washing laundry at the river, putting it together in a basket and carrying it home, you know. And she walked home. So he followed the lines. It's described in Bhagavad Gita, first you contemplate the sense object, then you want to get in touch. Because you cannot, you get angry. When you are furious and angry, the intelligence is lost. And then you just become mad. This is the standard procedure which we see all the time. So he was following, just following. You know? The females are perfect, equipped. There is sound, there is form, there is smell, you know. And when it's nicely composed, you know, the man starts to go. It's the simplest thing. First you see, then the sense of touch. Prabhupada said actually when the touch comes, that's where the real thing goes. And, you know, there's stories of men who become mad, you know. Just become mad. Just hypnotized following this. Therefore, there is a great responsibility on the part of the females to control it. They are in control. Therefore, chastity, that requires training. Because it's tempting, you know. If you have something so powerful, it's like if you buy a powerful gun, you want to shoot something, you know. You cannot just have a gun and going, wow, such a nice gun. You just go, you know. Sooner or later you can shoot something, maybe even yourself. So there is a responsibility in a Vedic society. You got this kind of equipment, you have to learn how to control it. And you have to learn the responsibility of that. Otherwise you just can kill others and kill yourself. So it's a powerful energy here at work. So Bilmanga Thakur couldn't resist. Just followed. But he knew. This is what Arjuna is asking Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. What is this? What makes me to act in a way I consciously know it's harmful, it's not good, but still it's pushing. And Krishna goes, no, that's nothing special. This is called lust. Simple. Very powerful energy. So Bilmanga Thakur was following. And the lady was a little bit uneasy, sannyasi, you know, just following. It's not a very common saying, so she went to her home, her husband came out, and he saw his wife coming in, and the Maharaj standing in front of the door. So he said, oh Maharaj, what an honor that you come to sanctify our home, what can we do for you? And Bilmanga Thakur was honest, he said, I would like to be alone with your wife. And he was like, well, the Vedic culture means that the guest is the king of the house. And the wife was like, help! So he said, okay, I will leave you alone. Then they were alone. And Bilmanga Thakur looked at the lady and he said, can you give me the hairpins? And the woman is loosening up the hair. It's considered practically like undressing in front of a foreign man. So the lady was desperate. You know, she just gave him the needles she had in her hair. And Bhimal Thakur said, "These two eyes, they were leading me to this place, to this situation. They are my enemy." And he put the needles into his eyes. I think then she was really screaming. Anyway, you know, so he became blind. And then blindfolded, he was proceeding to Vrindavan and became the great composer of scriptures like Krishna Kanamrita. Became a great, saintly, fully surrendered person. I saw this play being displayed by the Vaikuntha players, the special theatre team of devotees. They were very professional. In presence of Srila Prabhupada, in Bhaktivedanta Mena. You know, in Bhaktivedanta Mena, in a temple, they have a theatre. This is a estate where the lords used to live and just performing some Shakespeare and some theatre. So there's actually a small theatre in a temple. So when Prabhupada was present last time he was here in the West, the Vaikuntha players were performing. Whoever was present in that theatre, he will never forget his whole life. Because Prabhupada even said, when the actors are inspired, the personalities they embody, they enter them. So these actors, they were playing Bhimanga Thakur play, this pastime. They played it so beautifully. You know, that I remember the last scene where Bhimanga Thakur is living in Vrindavan, blind. Every morning, or every evening, he gets a bowl with milk brought by some village boy. And he's chanting and he's completely in ecstasy. So he goes, "Oh, this is very nice." He doesn't see, he just touched the bowl and goes, "This is very nice, you bring me this milk. And who is you?" And the boy goes, "I'm just a little boy from the village. They sent me here to bring you some milk." But Bhimanga Thakur gets suspicious because the sound of the voice is so special. So he goes, "I cannot find the bowl. Can you come closer?" And the boy is bringing the ball closer. When he comes really close, instead of the ball, Bhimanga Thakur grabs his hand. And he knows, this is Krishna. So Krishna is struggling, trying to get loose. And he holds him. He said, "I caught you. I have you. This is not a village boy. You are Krishna." And they struggle around and fight. And actually the actors depicted it in such a way that at the end Bhimanga Thakur is falling over, crawling on the floor. Krishna gets loose and he is looking for him. He is searching, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna." And ultimately Krishna jumps on his back and rides him like on a horse. That was the end of the play. So it was so ecstatic. And Prabhupada's presence made the whole thing so intense. Even he was not directly in a theater. He was in, you know, couldn't move. He was like, you know, on the first floor. So, but his presence was so that when, before the next theater piece came up, some Buddha started to fill the gap with some bhajan. So he started to chant, you know. And then something happened, which nobody could control. The bhajan turned into a kirtan, and the kirtan turned into a 3 hours at least monstrous kirtan. Everybody completely lost control. I remember devotees standing on the windows like this and jumping into the kirtan like in a swimming pool, head over, just like this. Four. Nobody got hurt. It was so outrageous. I remember there were seats. The Matajis were always in one section, so they just pushed the seats aside, and they were also completely crazy. Everybody was sky high, jumping. I was in the middle of the whole thing. I had no idea. I have just recollection of scenes of, sometimes I saw a feet of a devotee sticking like out of that crowd, you know. He was head down, and bodies were flying around, and the kirtan was just going like anything, and more and more. It was so ferocious that the temple president came running down. He was afraid we destroy his amplification system. You know, it was the amplification system in a bag. So he was opening the door and he was going, "Prabhu, shh, You know, there was Prabhupada resting up there. So he was going, and then hundreds of arms just reached for him and pulled him into the kirtan, and he didn't come out anymore. It was so outrageous. It was going on over and over and over again until suddenly it stopped. Like we pulled the plug out. And everybody was sitting on the floor wondering what happened. There was no time. There was no space. There was no place. It was completely out of it. He completely lost that. It's probably the only real kirtan I experienced in my life. Whoever was present, I still meet sometimes God brothers, and he said, "You were there in London in that kirtan." You know, it was no more this platform. There was no mind, nobody knew. There was nothing involved. It was just pure ecstasy. So such moments do exist when the pure devotee is present. So this is what Krishna does to a devotee. He is very carefully watching. And the more you surrender, the more tricky it gets. Prabhupada himself used himself quite often as an example. He said, first Krishna gave me everything. My business was doing quite well. There was a saying in Gaudiya Mata, it's no place in India where Abhay Babu doesn't go and make some money. Prabhupada was very, very aware how to make money. You know, he was coming from, you could say he was coming from the Vaishya department, but he was not a Vaishya, he was everything. He was a preacher, he was Prabhupada. To define Prabhupada in this way is impossible. So, but he knew about money. Even in his talks with devotees, there were devotees later on who came, who were of the similar qualification. You know, one of my god brothers, he got only one instruction, make money. he liked that. He said, Prabhupada even didn't tell him how. Well, anyway, he made lots of money. Prabhupada was attached to some rich people. He knew Ambarish, the grandson of Mr. Ford, you know, who was actually in trouble as soon he came close to devotees, because they realized, oh, Mr. Ford is coming. And immediately they were going, you know, we have this project and you could give us some money, 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 money. And he knew that. Everybody wants money from Mr. Ford, you know. And actually I met a few times Ambarish. He's a very simple devotee. Very nice, very beautiful devotee. So he got annoyed. Oh, I come here to the Hare Krishna movement and what do? They want money. So he became a little bit annoyed. So Prabhupada got hold of it and he said, nobody approaches this devotee except me, this bhakta. Nobody. Leave him alone. And then he took care of it. It's not the money. The person comes first. So, you know, so then he became inspired to such a degree that he just, by the way, financed the construction of the Mayapur temple. Putting in $60 million or something like this. Little pocket money, you know. So so he said, I will do this still for Prabhupada. Prabhupada told me actually to do this at the end. So anyway, so Prabhupada could deal with persons like this. But that's exceptional. Mostly Krishna is very keen not to give his devotee too much. He goes, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, I give him what he needs and I protect what he has. The best insurance company you can have. You know, yeah. But he never says, I give him what he wants. He says, I give him what he needs, not what he wants. And what do we need? Well, sometimes we don't know what we need. You know, we want something which could be potentially harmful for us. So Prabhupada used himself as an example, he said. And then Krishna took everything away from me. Everything got stolen. You know, his own relatives couldn't function to save it. And then his business was going, broke down. And Prabhupada at the end, practically penniless, was turning towards Vrindavan. They said, this is a joke, he will come back. You know, even in Vrindavan, when he was sannyasi, his family was coming and wanting money from him. And his son even came and they all wanted money. And he said, I don't have it. Prabhupada said, I gave them whatever was left and that was it. And still they came. He made even an offer to his son, become a brahmachari, live with me, then you can do that. You know? Nope. Actually, Prabhupada at the end mercifully arranged that they could at least have a place to stay, a flat in Calcutta, which he conditioned. He said, this is only for one generation. Nobody is inheriting this. So as soon you die, the flat goes. You know, it was one of the last things he did before he left the body. He was very merciful, very considerate. Actually, Prabhupada was considerate to the point of death. You could say, oh, it was a sannyasi. Sannyasi means heavy. No feelings. That's not sad. Prabhupada didn't say that. There are testimonies of God brothers which are heartbreaking, you know. And Prabhupada came later on. ISKCON was already going sky high and Prabhupada came to the Calcutta quarters where he was living as a grihastha, standing in front of his old house. He turned to his servant, I think it was Pramananda, Shyamasundara was there. He describes this. Prabhupada goes, I shouldn't say this, I'm a sannyasi. But what have I done? He said, I left my wife behind. She was not very Krishna conscious, but she was chaste, you know. Yeah. Then he looked at Shyamasundara and said, you know me, I'm a little bit temperamental. To be quite honest, I love to be a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, but I wouldn't like to be his wife, you know. Prabhupada was quiet. You see it on the photos with his mustache, you know. Prabhupada said, nobody could defeat me. The only one who could defeat me was my spiritual master. Otherwise, I was always a leader. You know, so to have a husband like this could have been quite heavy. You know? So Prabhupada was a very dominant personality. That's, you know, that's part of the leadership. So still he was a human. Sometimes people forget this. Oh, he was transcendental. You know, yeah, he was transcendental, but that doesn't mean, transcendental doesn't mean that you negate the whole thing. There is feelings and there is emotions. But you don't allow yourself to be dominated by that. You will be not dragged down by your emotions. Because there is a higher intelligence who tells you, yes, and that intelligence is coming from Krishna. This is Krishna's greatest gift. He can give to a devotee. He gives us a brain. Yeah, you suffer, isn't it? Yeah, now you understand. Therefore, as a devotee, we should not make the same mistake twice. Once, that's okay, that's for learning, you know. But twice, that's already very stupid. There are two kinds of learning. By hearing, that's very intelligent. And by experiencing. You know, that's the most, you know, school of hard knocks. So that's the most part. But still you are learning. And then Prabhupada said, there is a third class of people. They never learn anything. they just do the same stupid thing over and over again. You know, it's like man who sits on a tree and cuts himself off, you know, the famous picture, sitting on a branch, Prabhupada many times told this story, and somebody comes around and goes, "What are you doing? You are sitting on a branch and you're cutting yourself off the tree." And he goes, "This is your opinion." And he keeps on sawing, and then he falls down. Then sometimes Prabhupada continues the story. And when he falls down and he's lying on the floor, he still calls the man who is leaving, "Come, come, sir, please. How did you know I will fall down? You must be a great astrologer." You know, this is stupid. Now in Kali Yuga it gets much worse, much worse. Not only that idiot climbs another tree and does the same, but he's broadcasting it to others. This is another movement. We are the movement of the branch cutting people. And you think, "But you are all falling down." No, this is up. This is not down. We are advancing. "But you broke your leg." No, this is the movement of broken legs. Why don't you have a broken leg? Come, unity and continuity of the broken leg idiots. And they go on internet and make a web page for that. "Come, join us. You have two functioning legs, there is something wrong with you. Break one." How? "Come up with us, climb the tree. It's called the tree yoga, you know. We are making seminars. We'll give you a good quality saw and you can just saw yourself off and fall down. We are all doing it. The neighbor already did that. Why are you not doing that? We will give you a fancy ID card. You know, you will have a fancy ID card. I'm a member of the movement of the tree falling down idiots." This is going on all the time. So we don't follow. Prabhupada said, "We are not obliged." Just because somebody says, "Come, join, they are all doing that." Well, there will be no better example like some years ago. Not thought many years, well, it's going to be almost 100 years. There's so many idiots raising their arms, going, "Heil, heil, heil." Fascinated. You know how many disciples Mr. Hitler had? No ISKCON guru can compete with that. And you know the devotion of these disciples? They were ready to die for him in Stalingrad. Happily. Amazing, isn't it? They don't find so many disciples in ISKCON, sorry. "I will die for my guru." Not so much of that. But they did that. So it's so easy to fascinate masses. You just need some charisma and some blessing, and you can preach anything, any foolish thing. People will follow anything. You can convince people, you know, "I am like this and I am like that." So we have Shastra Guru Sadhu. We are on guard. Yeah? The Guru is there, is Shastra there. And is he confirmed by the Parampara Sadhu? Always checking. You have to always check. Otherwise the whole thing turns into personal cult. And personal cult means, "He is coming. What is he doing? I don't know. Where he comes from? I don't know. What is he actually saying? I don't know either. I just love him. Oh, the way he moves, the way he smiles." Oh, it's the best way to get cheated. Because the cheaters are really good at this. They will tell you what you want to hear. They will make you feel really good. But the real leader, a real guru, well, he may put it nicely, but still he will tell you the truth. And the truth comes always rather in a painful way when you live in an ocean of lies. So jeev jago, you have to wake up, wake up. The worst thing in Kali Yuga is that we are not trying to wake up sleeping people. When people sleep, to wake him up, it's still possible. You know, he sleeps and you go, "Wake up!" And he goes, "What?" But when he pretends to sleep, that's impossible. You try to wake a man up who pretends to sleep, you go, "Wake up!" And he goes, you know, and then he gets angry. "How can you dare to wake me up like this?" That's the preacher situation that we experience all the time. People know what we have to say. They know. I was yesterday on Harinam, was so inspiring in Ljubljana, because you can see how much preaching was done here. You meet practically only favorable people. People are smiling, waving, you know, yeah, appreciating, paying, you know. It's like, it's just saying, some preaching was done here. You know, Slovenia has one very exceptional situation. I heard even the government members and this and that, they are all favorably inclined. That's not always like that. Even nowadays, speaking about Europe, most countries, they don't care anymore. They don't care we exist or not. We could be dead or alive. They couldn't care less. They are so absorbed in their own problems, and they have other problems. They have people they brought in from other countries who, you know, who are completely incompatible with the environment. You know, so I heard one Ratha Yatra festival, you know, in one German city, and the police told to the devotees, there is a struggle going in a police station. When you have your Ratha Yatra festival, the police are fighting amongst each other who will be on service that day. Because to be on service, like accompanying the Ratha Yatra procession, it's like being on holiday. Just smiling, dancing people and feeding you all this nice prasadam, you know, the police is also taking. So he said, to be on service such a day, it's bliss. They are struggling. I want to be on a service. There is this Hare Krishna festival, you know. Just to, you know, have service on that day. Because next day they have a demonstration. He even said it. Some sort of Serbo-Croatian demonstration. And the atmosphere is very different from Ratha Yatra. It's just fighting even the police. So they all come with this heavy, you know, outfits, you know, and they go, well, that's the Serbo-Croatian demonstration, you know. When they come with us, they can come in a swimming suit. We don't care. It's just it's Hare Krishna singing, dancing, and distributing prasadam. That's it. So they like it. So for them, today, we are like angels. You know, there was other days in Germany. You know, I remember Germany when I walked out of the Sankirtan van, a simple household lady jumped on me. She caught me and said, I got him! Call police! Then police came and he said, okay, so what he has done? Well, he has done nothing, but it was in the newspaper. When you see Hare Krishna, you just catch them and call police. So I did that. The police said, okay, then. Well, you know, just go home. It was not going further, but we had these problems all the time. I was distributing on a street in the summertime and I suddenly felt a firm grip on my neck. And there was a lady behind me with the scissors and she said, we will cut this off! And she cut off my sika with the scissors. You know, things like that, we had it all the time. You know, so this is not today anymore going on, you know, fortunately. You know, this used to be Germany in 1975 or something like this, so going all the way into the 80s. The Hare Krishna movement is the most dangerous terroristic movement after the Second World War. You know, this was the newspaper headlines. But now it's just, now they have other problems. They think, Hare Krishna, they're just singing and dancing and... So some preaching was done. But the message we are carrying, the message is very heavy, very uncompromising. And the message is right away clear, here clearly described. You surrender to Krishna, He will take away your material attachments. And it's heavy. They are deep rooted since millions of lifetimes collected and cultivated. I want this, and still I wonder. We don't even know how many desires we have. That's the process of purification. Sometimes devotees get confused. I chant Hare Krishna, I become more disturbed. What is this? Yeah, that's where it's coming up. I want this, I want that. And when it comes out, choice has to be made. Do I want to follow this or not? And Krishna gives intelligence. He promises in the Bhagavad Gita, even those who are not very learned, I illuminate their path with knowledge. I give them the inspiration. I give them the knowledge. Sometimes, therefore, it's amazing. Sometimes you speak to a simple devotee and he can tell you such amazing things. And that's not from him. This is given by Krishna. How can he say such a thing? The man has no brain. And he just suddenly says something so nice and so Krishna conscious. You think, wow, this is coming from Krishna. You know, and I don't want to go now in detail, but we have already the occurrences where even the spiritual master is not there anymore. Then Krishna takes over. This is so evident sometimes, how Krishna takes care. Okay? That happens sometimes, the whole Guru Parampara disappears, you know. Then Krishna himself has to reincarnate and establish a new parampara. Just that the conditioned soul are sheltered and they have the opportunity to become Krishna conscious. He is so merciful. Nobody asked for him coming. He's coming anyway. Nobody asked him to sit in our heart as Anumanta and Upadrashta, observe and give permission. He's doing it anyway. And he goes even into the bodies of a dog, pig, and he's still there with the soul all the time. Now, of course, he's not conditioned by the body of the pig or the dog, but he is still there. Even in such a fallen condition, he is always accompanying the soul. It's quite amazing. We wouldn't do that. We have our limits. You try to help somebody, and he is ungrateful, he is disgusting. So at a certain point you say, you know what? Do it yourself. Bye-bye. That's a natural response. And it's actually written here that to facilitate the fool's desire makes you also to a fool. As a matter of fact, it makes you part of his karma. This is very dangerous for preachers. When they come close and they enter the people's private domains and their hearts, they get caught by that whirlpool of karma, you know. Everybody has a field of karma around him. And when you get caught up by that, you can get contaminated. It will drag you in. You know, I know one trained preacher in ISKCON who told me, everybody is good in the beginning. You know? Even when he pretends to surrender, you think, oh, what a nice bhakta. What a nice bhakti. So nice. But out of habit, they still rotate in that karmic, you know, mechanism. And then you come in, they put you in. And you start to rotate with them. And this is what requires spiritual protection. You have to be protected. You know, how many preachers we saw being actually ruined like this? They come too close. Gurus, they come too close. People open their hearts, you know, ooh, and what you see inside is not so funny, you know. And then you try to help, and it's like a doctor who is helping an infectious, diseased patient. So he has to be careful, he doesn't catch some bugs also, you know, and doesn't get infected as well. So he has to be well impregnated. Prabhupada was amazing. He could come so close. Oh, really? Yeah. And you felt, ah! But he never lost the spiritual, you know, protection shield. So he made you part of his spiritual life. Not that he became part of your material life. You have to be a very powerful preacher to do that. Assume so many. Therefore, this one rule in Kali Yuga, don't accept too many disciples. Because they will come. And they will just be like, it's like a grinding machine. At the end, you're thinking, oh, they're all suffering. How can I help them? Oh. But you are already in it. You are part of it. When you are part of it, you cannot help anybody. Then the doctors become sick themselves. Then, as a matter of fact, they also become infectious. It's a dangerous thing. So one has to always, it's not a selfish thing, it's absolute necessity to keep one's spiritual life intact. You know, always being protected by the Guru Parampara, by the backup. You know, then you can go out. Only to that degree we are protected, we can actually do that. Otherwise we become contaminated. And then we are of no use to anybody. So ultimately, in one morning walk, one devotee is all pathetically is asking Prabhupada, what will we do with all those who don't take Krishna consciousness? Prabhupada said nothing. They all go to hell. Yeah, but how can we prevent it? Prabhupada said, no, we cannot. We're very clear about this. We can offer. We can try. And it's a natural struggle of every devotee. Try to help others. Arrange things. But if they don't take it, then this is their choice, which even Krishna doesn't interfere with. It's your choice. So it's a way to say, no, I do it my way. And then Krishna goes, oh really? Well, sorry, then you have to work hard for it. And then go. But he's not happy about that. But the choice is always there. Otherwise we wouldn't be individual souls. We would be just robots following the surrendered line. Some people picture Krishna consciousness like this. They think, I will surrender. Boom. And I will be transported back home, back to God. You know? Like you transport, sometimes they have this transport stripes, you know. They put coal on it or some dirt and it just transported to the pile and then just plop, flops over. So you think, I will become a pure devotee and then I will flop over into the spiritual world. There's a big pile of pure devotees. That's called surrender. This was not Prabhupada's mood at all. He wanted to be a self-conscious, aware followers. Therefore, he always asks, do you understand what I'm saying? Nobody understands anything. So he repeated the whole thing. Again, again, training us to be able, because he knew there will be opposition coming. He knew there's Maya coming. And you have to explain to yourself and to others, what am I doing actually here? You have to come to the point like he did. And actually, it is not very difficult. Prabhupada gave us so much. People think, oh, you are arrogant. You are not doubting. They connect, you know, absence of arrogance with absence, you know, connect arrogance means there is no doubt. That's arrogant. No, that's called Krishna conscious. Prabhupada was also sometimes perceived like not very sensitive. He doesn't listen. He's not empathetically listening. Prabhupada said, okay, I'm listening. Say something. Bleh. Okay, that was very nice. Can you say something more? Okay, very good contribution. And now we are all going democratically vote. The sheep's here, the asses over there, and the pigs over there. Now you can have a vote. You want to be a member of the pig party, or the sheep party, or the cow party, or whatever party. The problem is that nobody is a human being here. So Prabhupada was considered sometimes, he was very uncompromising. Wow! People brought some big intellectual, you know, for darshan. And the man was going, I think, in my opinion, and Prabhupada was going, you can hear it on a recording. And then came already the first shloka out. he cut him off. The man couldn't even say what he wanted to say. And Prabhupada was already just establishing. You know. Now, we cannot copy this. We cannot blindly copy this. We are not on that level. But ultimately, what we got here to present, it's clear. I'm not a pure devotee, but I can tell anybody out there, try to defeat me, bring something. I can face any scientist, any intellectual, anything and say, come on, say something. Say something. I think, I believe, well that can change tomorrow. Are we going to discuss something which will change tomorrow? Tomorrow you will come with something else. And then we are wasting our time. I mean, you are searching the truth, right? You want some definition to something. Do you want some definition? You know, I can talk to anybody. It's only thanks to Prabhupada. Then they go, he is not empathetically listening. He's arrogant. What do you mean arrogant? Arrogant means that I invent something and I push it upon you. That's arrogant. I didn't invent anything. Prabhupada has a wonderful formula for that. Right away in the early days when he started to preach, in one lecture you can hear it. He feels that when he's establishing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, people get uneasy. You mean there is no other Krishna? You mean there is nothing better as this? And then Prabhupada stops and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, I am not criticizing, I am analyzing. And he says it in such a calm voice, Prabhupada could say such heavy things, you know. He went to Africa and said that the dark skin is a result of sinful activity. And you know, and he said things like that. Women are less intelligent and all this, you know. People were flipping out already those days. What to speak today? Wow, to say such a thing. And he said it. Because Shastra says it. And even devotees were like, oh, but some programs became really catastrophic, you know. People screaming, walking out of the door. Even in India, Prabhupada was accused that he's not Samadarshana. He's not a saint with equal vision. Prabhupada said, no, I am not. You are an idiot and you are not. That's the division line. He was very uncompromising. There's a whole book by Bhaktivinoda Maharaj, you can read this, preaching strongly on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, and there's nothing else in that book as quotes. It's not like inspiring some arrogant preaching, not at all. That book is actually showing a lots of, nuances, lots of ways how to actually sensitively preach. Still, by the end of the day, it's uncompromising. It is like that. It is not like this. It is like that. People hate this. They think, what about the democratic? Let's vote about it. He said, what's the use of your vote? You don't know anything and you want to vote? It's like in a room where there is darkness and then people can voice their opinion. You can put a basket with hair inside. Well, there is a story of a group of blind brahmanas analyzing what is an elephant. Who is an elephant? So the one is touching the trunk in front and he goes, elephant is something long and it's a little bit wet at the end. And the other is standing on the other end. He will touch the tail. He said, no. Elephant is something thin and it got a brush at the end. And the one who is touching the legs, he goes, no, you are all wrong. Elephant is something like a column. Now they are all right in their sense, but they are in darkness and they don't know it's an elephant. So in Krishna consciousness we get the full picture. Everything is in Krishna. Everything owned by Krishna. Everything enjoyed by Krishna. Everything is part of Krishna's energy. With that kind of approach you start to understand things as they are. And it's simple. It's not very difficult. You know, to understand that. Krishna says, I am the taste of the water. I am the shark among the fish. I am the strength in the strength ones. I am the ability in man. Actually, as I am alive. Whoever is alive can be only alive because of Krishna. When Krishna says, you are dead, then you are dead. Simple. You know, so it's just, Krishna makes it so easy, so accessible. You drink water, you think, the taste of water is Krishna. It's like, you know, He makes it as simple as possible. And still people think, now there must be something else. There must be something beyond Krishna. That's one of the functions of Maya. People go in a church and they go, God is here. Then they go out on the street and they go, now he's on holiday. He is not here. I can do any damn thing I want. No, he's still there. That all this Prabhupada brought to us. So it's such an amazing, wonderful thing he gave us. It's knowledge. And knowledge is connected to bliss. That's also something you don't see in the academic world. The more knowledgeable they are, the more miserable they are. Did you ever see an ecstatic professor? the way they just look, they are just horrible. Did you ever an ecstatic person who speculates, who is on a mental platform? No. He will walk back and forth like a pendulum, following the pendulum of the mind, you know, and he will go, maybe, it could be, maybe, it could be. It could be that maybe, you know. He never gets out of that trap. Did you ever a happy, lusty person? I'm happy, I'm lusty. No, they just... Where is the next sense objects I can, you know, I can grab, enjoy? This is all displayed in front of us all the time. Therefore, there is not one single happy person on the street. Sankirtan devotees know that. You go out there and they are, and when they are laughing, they are intoxicated by something. Otherwise, you cannot be happy, because that kind of happiness they have, it's just like tickling. You know, you can also make somebody happy by going like this, and he goes, ah! Okay, now he's happy. But when you stop, he's immediately miserable. That's not that kind of happiness. It's sensation. Sensation and happiness is just two different things. So the real happiness comes from insight, naturally. And it comes from knowledge. When you know it's all temporary, you become satisfied. Why do I struggle for this? It never stops to surprise me how more and more again people come up. Even in the name of Krishna consciousness, they go, this is mine, I am this, and then they die. You know, in the last 50 years, I saw quite a few people who were very empowered. But now nobody hardly knows their name. That's 50 years, you know. People used to chant their names. They were like, ha, who, ha, the chosen one, who, ha, the only one, who, ha. And now they don't even know the name. Only a few years passed and it's all... But again, new ones come and they go, big one. You see, do we have to play the game like this? The time is clicking. Krishna says, I am the time. And I came to destroy everything. I came to kill them all. So if we understand that, we become more content, become more satisfied, valuing the moment. You know that this morning never comes back. I'm sitting here since 1 hour. That hour never comes back. You know, it's quite enjoyable actually to sit here. I died since 1 hour, and that moment never comes back. And you are here, and I think, wow, so nice Ananta invited me. I can be in Slovenia. I can be here with you for a little while. Because after a few days, I'm sitting with other people, and they are not devotees. You know. And they will just tell me the same thing about how they are hoping to progress on a material platform. All Kripana Liga, you know, the all Kripana team. They will sit there and tell me, you know, yeah, I will progress and now I will own this and I will do that. And why did I didn't lost this? And it's a question of hankering and desiring. It's just like these two departments go on all the time. I couldn't get this, but I will get that. And you sit there and, you know, it's like going to movies, you know. They're just playing some movie there. You're saying, my God. And what happened to him? He was so prosperous. He achieved his goals. No, he died. And nobody talks about this. You know, it's just, sometimes I tell karmis, just go to the graveyard, damn it. Have a walk. And see all the stones there sitting with the pictures on it, the names, and where are these people? They're all gone. So you will have your stone too. Maybe. Maybe not. Now relatives are putting people, you know, into the ditches. You know, it's too expensive, the funeral. You know, so... what is it all about? It's about now, here. Now, here in Ljubljana, listen about what Prabhupada has to say, enjoying the association with those who at least have some doubt about this material energy, and they do something about it. They chant Hare Krishna and they want to do something about it. That's amazing. Such people exist at all, you know. Because the majority is out there thinking, Slovenia, Slovenia. And then a few kilometers further, another fool, you know, Austria, Austria. And another few kilometers, another fool goes, this is Germany, Germany, Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles, you know. And then, you know, and then there's always some fool sitting somewhere thinking, this is ours, this is our. They have these flags, you know. This is so pathetic. So that's how one learns to value the moment and value the permanent nature of Krishna consciousness. It's so nice to know, it's so nice to say always the same thing, because it's true. So Krishna is educating us by, according to the sincerity of the devotee, he eliminates these attachments. You know, exactly when you think, I got it, he blows it into your face. Krishna is very good at this. He always, you go, ah, finally, I got it. Poof! And you go, ah, oh, I look really like embarrassed fools. I could go more in details, you know. We had one devotee in Germany like that. It's really humorous. I always remember that. He was a quite a social person before he joined. But in Krishna consciousness, knowing the philosophy and preaching, you know, he was quite good preacher, but he was still mainly preaching to ladies. So it didn't take long. He always disappeared with some lady. And the first time it happened, you know, devotees were like, ah, he is in Maya. But he was too dear to Krishna. So Krishna sent him the same lady. A little bit Buddhistic, vegetarian, interested in spiritual life. And the only thing he could do to inspire the lady and have finally his sex life was to preach to her. Sounds strange, but some people do that. So he was like, oh, and she said, oh, this sounds very nice. Where did you get all the knowledge? Oh, that's Bhagavad Gita, I don't know. And he said, oh, where do you get the Bhagavad Gita from? Oh, that's the Hare Krishna. And she was always like, I would like to go there. So there he was, coming back on a Sunday feast with the lady. And the devotee was like, oh, okay. You know, he came with the Maya Devi. Yeah. But the girl was interested. In those days, we had a whole group of Matajis, Brahmacharinis even, you know. And ladies, they have their own way to do this. Men don't understand this. They were like, ah, Hare Krishna! And then, poof, they were on her. And she was like, and the lady preaching is like, ah, what is this? This is sari. Ooh, you know, this is silk. It's very good quality. And they go, ah, can I have it too? I said, sure, just join Hare Krishna. So she joined. It was very fast sometimes. And suddenly you had another lady standing there, you know, going, Hare Krishna! And he went home alone. What happened? Within 1-2 months, he came again to Sunday feast with another lady. Again, with Buddhistic, vegetarian, you know, yoga, you know, yeah, health food. Today it would be vegan, you know. So again the mother just said, ah! Boop! The same thing happened. You know, we got a whole Sankirtan van full of Matajis out of this. And devotees became very tolerant. They were going, oh, it's very nice you came again. Just go out, get another one. You know? We had a whole bhakti program out of this. So devotees were going, oh, there must be some plan Krishna has with him, you know? He was out there always. So Krishna has humor, you know? He can, you know, just, it was just a very, this is just a particular sink, you know. He created all sampradaya out of this Matajis, you know, by going out and trying to have some sex life, you know. It didn't really work. So, so yes, Krishna has various ways how to free us from our material attachments. He understands, sometimes we don't understand. But retrospectively, Prabhupada describes it sometimes on his Vyasa Puja days. That was the most emotionally loaded lectures you find on the Vyasa Puja days of Prabhupada, where he recollects always how Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj saved him, how Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj sent us to him. That's how he saw it, to assist him in the mission. And how Krishna destroyed all his material assets and made him completely dependent on him. Prabhupada recollects. One of these Vyasa Puja lectures is so intense. So Prabhupada breaks down, just stops, just breaks down, starts to cry, and devotees make kirtan. Because he cannot be so overpowered by that realization of that immense mercy which Krishna bestowed upon him. In form of his spiritual master, in form of his disciples, in form of his misery. How he nicely took away, gave everything, so he can give it back million times more, Prabhupada said, million times more. And the reporter asked Prabhupada, what about your family? You had a family. Are they Krishna conscious? Prabhupada said, not very much. And so your children are not Krishna conscious? Not very much. Therefore, I had to create another family. And he points to his disciples. And devotees go, Prabhupada ki jai! <You know? laughs> Yeah. Because the family concept, it comes from the spiritual world, you know. It's one big family up there. With Krishna in the center. That's the ultimate family. Our spiritual family. Here we are trying to reproduce it in a mediocre way, but it doesn't work all the time. So Krishna is helping. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.